quorum, so I'll call the...
I'll call the meeting to order, and Representative Green has very studiously looked at both sets of minutes, and so he's ready to move both of them, the minutes of April 2nd and the minutes of March 20th. Okay, so move. And the all those in favor of adoption of minutes, say aye.
Aye. Right.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. Okay? We're now into, and let me remind everybody who's here and who might be upset about anything that we're here and we're taking testimony and we're not taking...
give us our schedule for voting, Michael. You.
Okay. Friday we'll be voting on amendments for this. So people have 2 full days to look at them, redo them, suggest things, and so forth. So... Friday. Huh. Yeah, we're meeting Friday. okay.
We have Mary.
And we've listened, you know, we've already listened to some comments, and so when we know we're going to make some changes, we'll probably say that. Representative Torkelson?
Perhaps we could just start at 12:05, Friday, you know, right after midnight on Friday morning.
So, no, I think we're not allowed to by those rules that you guys keep voting for. I think we can't start until 7 a.m.
But, Representative Pond, I believe it's only 10 o'clock in California then.
Well, we'll work. I'll take advice from people as to what they think we need to do. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Is it okay, Mary? You want to go through the language, and Helen will go through the numbers. Which do you want to do first? You want to do the language first, or what?
Sure.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. What do you want to add? The numbers at the what? Would you guys know what you're doing? Tell me.
Madam Chair, if I could walk through the spreadsheet first, so that Mary doesn't have to, Ms. Mullen doesn't have to walk through the appropriation section, although she may want to point out specific language.
Thanks.
And then there's language at the bill that is not specifically tied to numbers.
Thanks. Great. Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair and members, so
can we close the door, please?
Okay. looking at the spreadsheet, there's 4 columns. The first 2 columns are the history for funding for various projects. The third column is the total request. So these are all of the requests that came to the committee. And then the final column is the shows the amounts that are actually funded in the bill. And I'll walk through this quickly. If members have questions, please interrupt me. On line 9, you'll see the total for the board of the State Arts Board is $47.43 million for the biennium. The next agency
in case
that's...
anyone is disappointed, I'll point out that we didn't get near total requests for anybody. They were way out of range of us, so...
On line 13, under the Department of Education, you'll see the grants to regional libraries, and those are funded at $3 million a year for a total of $6 million. Moving down to the Historical Society, the total funded is $26.4 million, and you can see the breakout above that corresponds with the individual items that the Historical Society has asked to be funded. Moving on to the Department of Administration, this is where you'll see many of the sort of fiscal agent categories. The first grouping is public broadcasting for public television on line 30. The total funding is $7.9 million. Right below that on line 31, you'll see the total funding for Minnesota Public Radio is $3 million for the biennium. And for the Association of Minnesota Public Education Radio Stations, also known as AMPRS, the total funding is $3 million for the biennium. The next group, starting on line 37, are the zoos. So the first one is the Como Zoo, funded at $600,000 for the biennium. On line 38, the Lake Superior Zoo, $300,000 in the first year. And then on line 39, the Lake Superior Aquarium, $200,000 for the Shipwrecks Alive exhibit. Moving on to page two, for the children's museums, you'll see there's a line that is blank for the Minnesota Children's Museum. That's only because we moved that under the Humanities Commission, and so I've moved the history down to that line also to so that you'd have it all in one place. On line 45, the Science Museum, the funding is $2.2 million for the biennium. The next grouping is the film requests, and on line 47, you'll see the Minnesota Film and TV Board is funded at $1 million for the biennium. And the final items in Department of Administration on line 51, small theater grants, that's $150,000 for the biennium. And then on line 42, $80,000 for to place busts of Nellie Stone Johnson and Harry Blackman in the Capitol. So the total for the Department of Administration on line 58 is $18.43 million. Moving on, the Minnesota Zoo on line 61, there's a total of $3.5 million for program development. And then going down to the Humanities Center, the first grouping is the requests from the Humanities Commission themselves, directly from them. On line 65, there's $650,000 for program development, $1,050,000 for the Council of Color Competitive Grants. On line 67, you'll see $500,000 for the Civic Education's Competitive Grants. And then on 68, $1 million for the Children's Museum Competitive Grants. And then two other items that are funded under the, or three that are funded under the Humanities Commission. On line 72, there's $400,000 for the biennium for the Minnesota Council on Disabilities for the 25th anniversary, the anniversary of the ADA Act. On line 73, you'll see $1 million for the Minnesota Children's Museum, and again, that previously had been under Department of Administration. And on line 74, for the Southern Minnesota Children's Museum, $400,000 for the biennium. On the final page, on line 78, the Purpich Center for the Arts, the funding is $2,045,000 for the biennium. Under Department of Agriculture, there's a total of $2.8 million for the County Fairs Arts Programs. Moving down to the Indian Affairs Council, the total funding is $2.3 million, and you can see the breakout above that for the individual items. And finally, to the Legislative Coordinating Commission, there's a $14,000 appropriation for the Legacy website. So you can see on line 104, the line 100, the total appropriations by year, and the total for the biennium was $113,919,000. And that leaves a projected balance at the end of fiscal year 2015 of $2,407,000.
Chair and representatives, I'm going to try to go through it as briefly as I can. The first section is general appropriation language, and section two is broken down into subdivisions with everything being funded listed in there. The first subdivision lists the total appropriation, and the second subdivision addresses that, you know, money cannot be used on indirect costs, which is an issue from the past that hopefully is taken care of with that language. Subdivision three is the Minnesota State Arts Board. The Arts Board is broken down into four pieces, and the first one is the Arts and Arts Access Initiative. This is gonna be art activities and allowing access to art activities. The Arts and Education is the next section under there, which is going to be the educational opportunities, the arts and cultural heritage, which is cultural arts traditions, including folk and traditional artists and art organizations. And then the last portion there is that includes funding is their administrative costs. There is
a section at the end there about the census, which is a carryover from previous biennium related to the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Council maintaining a census of Minnesota artists. Subdivision 4 is the Department of Education, and these are the regional library grants. And you can see they have some specific language in there about public libraries, regional library systems, and they use those for arts and history and cultural events in the libraries. The Minnesota Historical Society is Subdivision 5, and that is broken down into, again, a few different programs. There's the statewide historical and cultural grants, and those are for statewide programs that are given out as grants. There are program grants that are conducted by the Minnesota Historical Society. There are historic partnerships, again, enhancing access to history and cultural heritage in all regions of the state. And then there's statewide historical archaeology sites. This is potentially a contract that's going to be awarded on a competitive basis to do surveys of historical sites. The next section is digital libraries, which is digitizing historical documents and historical materials. Subdivision 6 is the Department of Administration, and as you heard from when Ms. Roberts went through it, there are a number of different organizations listed in this section that are getting grants through the Department of Admin. The first of which is the Minnesota Public Radio. A number of these awards in this section do require a 25% match of the project cost to go with the programs that they're going to be pursuing, and Minnesota Public Radio is one of those. AMPRS is listed after that. They also require a grant match. The Lake Superior Center Authority is listed after that, and that's the shipwrecks up in Duluth that we heard from, and that also requires a 25% match. The Lake Superior Zoo, the program that was also presented to the committee, is listed, and that one requires a 25% match. The Como Park Zoo, the same thing, requires the match. The Science Museum, their funding requests is broken up into two pieces, and it's for their general programming and access to programs, as well as their American Indian Initiative, and then also funding to upgrade the Omni Theater, and that does require the 25% match. The public television, that appropriation is not broken into different pieces. And it also does require the 25% match. The Minnesota Film and TV Board, that's for film awards for grants that highlight Minnesota arts, culture, and heritage. And then again, it also does require a 25% match. The small theaters, this is a grant that would help theaters who have 35mm films get digital projection systems, and it's focused on areas where they might not have any other theaters or theaters that only have one screen. This does require a 65% matching grant to what would be awarded. The last part here is the Nellie Stone Johnson and Justice Harry Blackman busts for the State Capitol building. Subdivision 7 is the Minnesota Humanities Center. Their appropriation is broken into a few pieces. The first part is the programs and purposes. This is their grant issuing for different cultural, I guess is probably the best way to look at it. Celebrating identities of Minnesotans is what they have in here for that grant program. The Civic Education Grant Program is directed at civic and cultural development of Minnesota youth. That section does require a matching grant of 25% for projects. The Children's Museum grant is a competitive grant for different children's museums. That one also does require a 25% grant. The Minnesota Children's Museum is awarded a grant through that for arts and arts education and access, and that does require a 25% match. The Southern Minnesota Children's Museum is also awarded a direct grant for the creation of exhibits, and that requires a 25% match as well. The Councils of Color have a competitive grant that's accessible by the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, the Council on Black Minnesotans, the Indian Affairs Council, and the Chicano Latino Affairs Council. And the grant recipients under this portion also require a 25% match. And then the Council on Disabilities is receiving a grant for a celebration of Minnesotans with disabilities, the arts and history and cultural heritage, and then also the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The next section is Subdivision 8, which is a Purpich Center for the Arts. And this is a grant that, again, is broken down for them into a number of different places, the first of which is administrative costs, for their administrative costs. The second one is the Arts Integration Network. This is programs designed to help teachers and arts education. It's actually a few different programs that they're doing, including expanding it to a regional program. The Arts Integrated High School Courses is the next one, and that's for the development of arts courses for the 2015-2016 school year. The next one is a statewide study on the status of arts education. Subdivision 9 is the Department of Education and, the Department of Agriculture, and these are the county fair grants. They're a little bit different in that the one half of the grants, which is $700,000 each year, is for competitive grants to enhance arts access and education to preserve and promote Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. The priority is given to grants that utilize resources through the area's regional art councils and encourage local art development or create a traveling exhibit. And then the other set is for a competitive grant as well, and that would be for projects that provide access to arts education, agriculture, historical, or cultural heritage programs, including agriculture education centers, art buildings, and performance stages. The next subdivision is Subdivision 10, and that's the Minnesota Zoo, and that's a direct appropriation to the zoo for programs related to arts, culture, and heritage. The next section is Subdivision 12, which is the Indian Affairs Council. This appropriation, again, is broken down into a few different pieces. One of them is a grants program to preserve Dakota and Ojibwe language and foster educational programs related to those languages. The second appropriation is a $125,000 appropriation each year to two different Ojibwe immersion schools. And then the next section is a competitive grants program for language immersion schools in order to develop curriculum and provide teachers and testing. And then the last subdivision here in this section is the legislature for the website coordination. So now we're on to Section 3, and this is language for AMPRs in their statute, which is 129D.19. It's very technical. It just adds them here in front of the non-commercial radio stations and also with the use of the grant funds to allow the grant funds to go directly to AMPRs in order to make their grant funding work. section, and that includes section 3 and section 4. Section 5 is related to the Capitol cafeteria, and it states that the city of St. Paul shall issue an on-sale wine and liquor license to the Capitol cafeteria. And section 6 is the Minnesota Orchestra and St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and it indicates that.
Okay. We'll talk about that after.
Okay. So the orchestra language simply indicates that the previously expended funds to the Minnesota Orchestra and St. Paul Chamber Orchestra will be recaptured by the Commissioner of Management and Budget. That and also that any grants that have been issued to them will also be canceled if the orchestras are not performing and the labor dispute has not been resolved. I think that's it.
Okay. Okay, fine. Any specific questions from committee members? I will make one slight correction. First of all, this Capitol Cafeteria wine and beer license is actually a historic thing. We passed it from a committee in the House to the House floor, kind of in this language. At that time, Representative Bishop amended it on the House floor to for only special events, and then I guess the Senate changed it to a May. I thought it was totally taken out, totally. Senate changed it to a May, and the actually what I'm, you know, I don't know if you want to officially do it now, but I've been requested to put back it only for special events, not for the general, not for general luncheons and so forth. So, sorry, I put those good.
How much revenue does it raise?
What?
How much revenue does it raise?
I don't know. Could be, if we kept it as written, probably a lot. I think I had visited a state capital. I don't remember if it was Wisconsin or in Tacoma in Washington, where they were selling beer and wine in there. State Capitol cafeteria. I thought it was a good idea, but I think maybe a step at a time is a better way to go. So, anyway, that's just an explanation. Representative McDonald.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Question regarding line 14.13 regarding the under the Department of Agriculture.
Yeah.
The $700,000 allocated in the first year for the competitive grants to Minnesota County Fairs. Is any of that funds available for this Minnesota State Fair Artson program? Yeah, can it be, or would that be a separate issue?
They're not county. These are going to the county fairs, not to the Minnesota State Fair.
No,
I don't know that we've ever had a request from the Minnesota State Fair.
Madam Chair.
What?
Yeah, no, I recognize that. This was one of the components. It's not new. I suggest I give you the. I was hoping that it'd be in here again this year. But also recall that all the county state fairs send their 4-H'ers who do many art projects, including singing and dancing and art projects and photography and painting and you name it. It's endless. Of course, they get blue ribbons and purple ribbons and are then sent to the state fair. And then the state fair has also they have the state arts and program that puts on these shows. So I was just curious as to if is that another that would be another issue or that could be an amendment or how can we deal with that?
It sounds like that would be a supplanting, not a supplementing, if they're already doing it. So I don't know how, you know, if it were a new program, it's the kind of thing we could do with legacy funds. But I think we have to be a little careful about putting in the funding for something that's been going on without that funding. Unless there's something that we can show that it's an extension of that. So, I don't, you know, understand what I'm saying. It's that constitutional prohibition of supplanting rather than supplementing.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have the conversation offline another time.
Okay.
But I appreciate your answer.
And, you know, we're amenable to listening to ways that, you know, that it might work. but I'm just saying, as you describe it, it doesn't sound like it could work. Okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just wondering, on the money going to the Humanities Center, the Councils of Color Competitive Grants, $500,000 a year. Now, is the intent there that the Councils of Color, through the Humanities Center, compete, the four of them compete for the $1 million?
I think so. The one of the things that I'm intending to do with this bill is something that we always did when I was chairing the State Department's bill, is I intend for us to have working papers that pull out specific groups that we've talked to and so forth, and saying that these are the these are programs that we think are worthy of looking at for funding, you know, for funding purposes, so it doesn't have the strength. I don't like the idea of line iteming anything, but the idea of giving some, and, you know, the working papers would be something that we would look at and would agree on. It wouldn't be done individually.
Madam Chair, if I could, I just want to give maybe a little history, and what I'm trying to do is get us on the record on this. When Representative Murphy was chair, these were given out as grants to the four groups, and it came out roughly, well, it came out the same. I think it was $250,000 apiece. What our committee did 2 years ago is to do a competitive grant program, and the intent was, as I just outlined, that the four would basically submit proposals and justify their need in competing for that $1 million. And the thinking was that it would generally come out about $250,000 each. And that is close to what happened. There might have been a little variety, but it pretty much was as we planned it to be. One of the groups thought that when we passed this competitive grant program, it meant that they received the $250,000 and then through their council gave out competitive grants. And that wasn't what was intended, and I guess I want to get on the record that that is not what is intended here.
Okay, and again, maybe that's something we can make clear in the working papers, which won't be law, but we'll do that. Okay. And is there any thoughts about, you know, my two chairs are here to tell me what to, two ex-chairs here to tell me what to do. Any thoughts about the complications and maybe people of doing separate lines or just having, you know, I kind of like the idea of competitive grants where what you're thinking of is that it's going to be roughly equal, but where people have to, if someone submits an inferior grant and someone submits a very superior grant, they don't have to be exactly equal. So, just, you know, again, we don't have to have the exact language now, but Representative Murphy.
Or Madam Chair, if the four groups would talk about how they could work on one program together.
Whoa.
With some wow idea for, ooh, some event or something where people from all four communities would be reaching out to the masses of Minnesotans on some level. Wouldn't that be something? And maybe if something like that was visioned, we could even do in a later time.
Much more.
Couple million.
That's the kind of thing I think that I'm interested in putting in working papers as opposed to the exact lines, unless we could reform it. I can't see quite reforming it to the to the point where we want to put it into law. But again, those are the points I want people to bring up. That's a great idea. Okay, Representative Ford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative McDonald's question, very good question regarding the state question, state fair question, Representative McDonald. And I'm carrying that bill this year with the county fairs, and so I remember during the testimony and in the process of carrying the bill that this is the same appropriation that we made to the county fairs in the last biennium as well, And I remember the testimony was that, you know, there was a great need at that point for the county fairs. You know, they used all the money. They used it well. There actually could have been a, you know, increase in a, in appropriation as basis at, on the need, but there was not an increase in the appropriation. We put in for the same amount. So if we all of a sudden, Madam Chair, members, Representative McDonald, all of a sudden now we include some for the state fair, you know, then we are going to have to eliminate some county fair projects that really served all the citizens in the state of Minnesota quite well. So I just wanted to make that get that comment on record as well.
Well, I don't, you know, unless there can be some modification of the McDonald suggestion, I don't think it's something that it looks that we can do, unless there's some, you know, but from what he was thinking of totally, it was going to be under the control of the county fairs. It wasn't going to be taking away from them and going, being given to the state. But, Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I've noticed in the new bill that the Science Museum is, I think, one of a very few groups that got their full request. And I would just, I'm not opposed to that by any means, but I would just like to hear your explanation of that.
Okay. The explanation of that is that it was for a very specific project, and that's for the conversion of their IMAX system, which has been very successful. But Michael, you better say it. That's right. Yeah. It's the Omni Theater. It's needed for the Omni Theater. Is that how it's
one time?
Yeah. It's a one time. It's a one time appropriation for the Omni. Okay.
Along that line.
Yeah.
Madam Chair. Going from the Omni Theater to the small theater grants, which I don't think is a bad idea, $150,000. But where did that request come from?
That came from Representative Metza, and what it is this problem of the very small theaters, and two examples in Cook and so forth. Representative Ansel also.
Yeah.
Which are being, you know, those theaters are going to have to close unless they can convert it, and it's beyond their ability to convert for it.
And, Madam Chair.
It's not specifying any, but it's to see where that's needed and if we need more, you know, if we need to put more into that.
And, Madam Chair, I agree that that's in our small communities around Minnesota, a very, you know, it's a big problem. I know of a community where the townspeople are raising money to convert their small theater because otherwise it'll be out of business. The point I'm making is that I think this is a good idea. Unfortunately, it's going to fund only one or two theaters in the state, and maybe we need to think more in the future about other ways that we can help more.
This is one that requires, and I think that probably came from Representative Metz's and Ansel, that this requires a very substantial cash match to do
it. I think it's 65%, if I remember.
What?
I think it was 65%.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, you know, again, I guess when we get to our final bottom, I'm people to think about that, something that they'd like to see either raised or lowered or something in this as we go through it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that topic, I'm aware of the local theater in my hometown, which doesn't happen to be in my district, but my wife was active in a fundraising effort to digitize our local theater, and the cost of that effort was about $70,000. So a $150,000 program even really doesn't make much of a dent if you're really trying to address the issue. Just a comment. So if
is there kind of agreement in the committee that this is something that we really want to address and we should look at trying to put some more money in this? Is this something that, you know, you're not voting, but I'm just, is this something that we should look at?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say yes. These small towns that have a one-horse theater, it's often a community center in a way, and these very, and it's not a very profitable business to start with.
Sure.
And so this conversion is expensive, and the only way we were able to, my hometown was able to do it was through a fundraising program where the community stepped forward. And if we could encourage other communities to do likewise, I think it'd be a valid effort.
Okay, we may have to look at what kind of a budget reserve we want to look at and so forth. So,
McDonald,
yeah, Madam Chair, I would think if it's constitutional, by the Constitution of Section 10 or whatever it was in here, under arts and cultural, if it is something that we find constitutionally that we should be investing in, that it does indeed preserve the arts and the culture and the heritage of Minnesota, then I'm all in favor of it. I do see a little favoritism, and I'm a big fan of the Science Museum and their Omni Theater, but they only have to come up with 25%, and they have a great funding mechanism of fundraisers and making money at the Omni Theater, where the small town theaters have to come up with 65%. So in that comparison, when you're looking at a digital theater for the Science Museum, who has full capabilities of making a lot of money, and the small theaters don't, it's not fair. Life isn't fair, of course, is it, to the small theater. So if we are truly wanting to help them, and I say if it is under our Constitution and under that particular funding mechanism that we should, then perhaps we need to look at less of a investment on their part, maybe a 25% match on their part to be equal to that of the Science Museum, because we don't want the little guy to not necessarily have all the advantages of the big guy, do we?
I think that came from, because we were told that these theaters were really going on as Representative Torkelson said, they were already raising a lot of money to do it, you know, that they had an effective base and they were raising a lot, you know, a lot to do it. And so that what they needed was just this little bump extra to help them get to the end. So, you know, I mean, the other thing is, it's just, again, the Science Museum, when they get that kind of, as I said, it's a one-time appropriation, and that does become a money making thing, and none of these other things return money to the, you know, to the institution. So, Representative,
Madam Chair, if I may address that, I think I don't know if what news channel, Channel 5, 411, one of them, Alan Constantine, I think, did a story. Anyway, on the small theaters and the digital theaters and the small mom and pops popping popcorn and stuff, I don't think they have the capability of raising a large amount of money to pay for a $70,000 projector. Not nearly the capability of the Science Museum. Probably just a pittance of a fundraiser. If you imagine a small community, they don't have the funds and the capabilities of raising hundreds of thousands of dollars or even 20,000. Okay. So I think we should lower that percentage.
Well, one of the things we can do, and actually I've been chastised by several people, and we may hear them talk about the requirement 25% match that we've written throughout this, which has not been done before, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to get rid of the concept for almost all things of required matches and probably keep it for the Science Museum thing, and we're going to make it a suggested match. We're going to have some language that would say we expect them to raise matching funds, and that grants will obviously, you get a boost up on the granting process if you've raised matching funds. But I've been told in several places, and we'll probably have people telling us this today, that matching fund is too onerous, that 25% matching fund is too onerous for other things. So we want something in it to encourage the matching funds, but not require it, because we haven't done that requirement for matching funds before.
Madam Chair, I don't know if I would agree with that. I think it's good to have the matching grants. In this particular case,
yes.
small theaters. I think for them to come up with 65% could be, I don't think it's feasible, but I could be wrong. But I think it's important to have all these great projects have some skin in the game and some matching. There's a pride. There's a certain pride that goes into it. I was, as a mayor of Delano, we had grants to help get rid of our flood zone, and we had to raise the money. It was a matching grant. I think it's important that I wouldn't advise to take away any requirement for them to match.
I think if you say it's going to be something that's used in the judging process, it's almost a requirement. So I think it, particularly if it's a competitive process, I think we'll have the same effect. And the point is, we haven't done this before, and maybe that's an easy way to ease into it. But again, it's a work in progress.
Yeah, I know that everyone in the audience probably certainly didn't agree with me when I say it should be somewhat of a matching grant, not a suggestion. I certainly get that, but there should be some skin in the game, and I wouldn't advise taking that out.
I guess we think easing off the absolute requirement, but saying it's something that should be looked at in the granting process, is still acting as a requirement. So, we'll see who's right at some point. Okay, where am I going? Representative Hausman.
Okay.
Anything else? I would like to. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious about the money for busts in the Capitol. Could you talk a little bit about how that was arrived at?
Actually, Representative Mullery put in the bust for the, request for the Nellie Stone Johnson one, and I put in the request for the Blackmun one, which looking at the Supreme Court, looking at Brugger sitting all alone, we think he needed his friend Blackmun next to him. Since they did the same things and their careers were totally parallel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't aware that busks could get lonely, but I guess it's possible.
I know that the Nellie Stone Johnson is also in Representative Murphy's bill. It may not. I don't know. It just seems like such a real legacy issue, just like the liquor in the. The Rastella. It's completely clear. We're totally certain that when the Rastella was built and decorated as it was, that wine and beer was served there through Prohibition. And so in the legacy bill, we're really just restoring the legacy of the Rastella in the Capitol. We're not doing anything that's any more than that. So...
I, Madam Chair, I would just hope that it's Shell's beer at the cafe. the other question, along with in regard to these busts, is there some process within the Capitol operations that approves something like this, and where they go and all that?
No, it goes. Yeah, there's a total process in doing that through the Capitol.
Has that process been, have these two particular busts been vetted by that process?
No, but the process, I don't think they get there until the process. And if we need to put that language in, we'll clearly, it's the Capitol, the Capitol architectural and so forth thing does that. So.
And is there any work toward balance of political perspectives on these bust selections?
They're both. The problem is they're both Republicans, so I don't know what. I don't know how you can do it. There was a suggestion. We did have a suggestion from Representative Erdahl that for completion. I'm sorry, no, not for the two busts. The two busts are balanced. One is a Democrat and one is a Republican. If you look at the Supreme Court justices, they're both Republicans. Representative Erdahl, do you want to speak for yourself? Representative Erdahl.
Well, since we already have the bust, Madam Chair, of Warren Burger, and Representative Kahn is suggesting Justice Blackmun, we're missing one, and that would be... Supreme Court Justice Pierce Butler, and so we maybe should look at him too. You can maybe draw that one up too.
So, I mean, it is very unusual for a state to have, a state the size of Minnesota, I think, to have that many Supreme Court justices that have been elevated. So, anyway, it's just a suggestion, as I pointed out. Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had just a couple of things and then maybe some questions for later, too. But from what I've read of Nellie Stone, she wasn't a Democrat. She was a socialist. She's a member of the Socialist Party. So maybe I better double-check that and make sure that's not true. But the other question is, $40,000, is that normal for a bust?
Representative Murphy, I think, has some information on
Madam
that.
Madam Chair, when the State Department's committee heard the proposal, they said they wanted something that was significant to children. And I can't see children getting too excited about a bus, but I think there should be a statue then, a statue that they could touch. And certainly a statue costs more than a bus. So I think $40,000 would be good.
I guess we'll disagree on that one. The other one is, as far as...
Let me put it out. Nellie Stone Johnson was a very important person in the formation of the DFL party, in the merging of the DFL with Hubert Humphrey. She was at one point a member of the Young Communist League, which she totally renounced, at some later point. But she was a very important DFL person. And okay. She was not, and at the time, certainly when she was elected, first black person, I believe, elected to the Minneapolis School Board, I think at that time she was nothing except a Democrat. So.
Okay. Can I continue?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. The other thing is just on the alcohol in the cafeteria, somebody wants to drink, that's their business. But I had some conversations a while ago with staff members that have been here a long time, and I don't know why the subject came up, but they said they were very glad when they stopped drinking here, because it got to be very uncomfortable for some of the women and staff members when people were drinking, whether it was after hours or during hours, and so that might be one thing to consider there too.
Representative Ream, I think that's part of the consideration of making sure we're just looking at events, special events, instead of universal sale. I always pride myself, by the way, on having the wettest voting record combined with the driest lifestyle of any legislator who's ever been here. So, Representative Murphy.
Representative Green, you're absolutely right that some of those stories are true, and that was hard liquor. But this is just wine and beer.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, I have not gone out drinking for many, many years since my children were small. But I do know that you can get pretty drunk on wine and beer.
Not like I did when I first
I'll have to concede you probably know more than me then.
Well, one of
my early years here. There was a lot of hard liquor.
Well, one of my comments that I tweeted once, which is only meaningful for people who've seen the film Lincoln, was that seeing Lincoln, I really feel we've suffered from our emphasis on decorum and good language, and so something like that in the legislative process. That looked like a much jazzier scene in there. So, okay. Okay, I think we better go to public comment. So that we get, and with Ampers, is one of the people who've asked. With it. Oh, let me. I'd like to move the DE2 amendment to House File 1183 so that it is properly before us, with the understanding that things will be changed as we go on. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passed. Okay, we now have it properly before us.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Glazer. I am the executive director of AMPRS, the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations, and I'm joined by our lobbyist, Tom Hansen of Winthrop & Weinstein. First of all, I'd like to thank you for including AMPRS and its member stations in the proposed legacy bill. We truly appreciate your continued support. As you know, the AMPRS stations are not affiliated with Minnesota Public Television or Minnesota Public Radio. 14 of the 15 stations qualify for state funding and primarily serve greater Minnesota and minority communities. Since we have been before this committee very recently, I will keep my comments quite brief. We have two significant concerns that we'd like to bring to your attention about the proposed legacy funding for AMPRS and its stations. As you may recall, AMPRS has three new stations that just started broadcasting in the past year and a half. All three are affiliated with smaller Native American tribal bands in northern Minnesota. Because each station is independently licensed and operated, funding should be evaluated on a per-station basis. While the $3 million appropriation is an increase for the group, as you will see on our handout, because there are three new stations, the $3 million appropriation will actually mean a significant cut for each station. If the appropriation stays at $3 million, the 11 original stations would receive $24,000 less than they did in the first biennium that legacy funds were distributed. Because each station received different amounts of the funding in the last biennium, a biennium-to-biennium comparison is more difficult, but the stations would be getting less than they did last biennium as well, some seeing cut as much as $41,000. We do realize that funding is not guaranteed from biennium to biennium, and we appreciate the fact that you see the value in our legacy programming. That said, legacy funds continue to grow, and the overwhelming majority of recipients have seen an increase in both bienniums, and our stations would be getting a decrease. We would ask that you consider amending our appropriation to $3,430,000. That would provide the stations with a modest 3% increase from the first biennium. If that is not possible, we would ask that you at least increase it to $3,332,000, so that the stations would be flat from the first biennium. You'll see that number in the handout as well. One more thing that I'd like to point out about the funding and the new stations. These stations did not have to join AMPRS. In fact, originally they talked about forming their own group. Had that happened, these numbers would have looked very different. AMPRS has three new stations and is getting an increase of a little more than 200,000 over last biennium. NPR has no new stations and is seeing an increase of more than 500,000 in what appears to be an effort to keep the two groups equal. As a result, the original AMPRS stations essentially end up getting punished and with less money because they welcome the new Native American stations to their group. Had the new stations not joined AMPRS, the original AMPRS stations would most likely be getting the same funding and possibly more. I would also like to take just a moment to address the 25% state cash match requirement. The AMPRS stations are small community stations, many of which have only 2 to 3 full-time employees and at most 9. These employees have to program and run every aspect of the radio stations. Most radio stations have teams of 8 to 14 people dedicating to securing non-government funding. The AMPRS stations, however, simply do not have the staff or resources for a 25% match. While other legacy recipients may have teams out there doing so, we do not. You may be thinking, if they're so small that they can't secure matching funding, how are they able to do the legacy projects? The stations can do so using legacy funding to hire additional producers, artists who do the programming, but they would not be able to use those funds to hire somebody to secure the 25% match. Unfortunately, it's not an exaggeration to say that as a result of this new requirement, most of the stations would lose most, if not all, of their funding. We do not believe that is your intention and would ask that you remove this requirement from our appropriation language. Again, thank you very much for your continued support, and I am available should you have any questions.
Are there any? First of all, I'll give you my assurance that we will remove the 25%
thank you
requirement, but probably Maybe. I'll see if I have the votes. I'm getting a glare from Representative McDonald. But we are going to put some language, possibly all-inclusive in the bill that will encourage the, grant recipients to be looking, to be using the fact that they're getting public money to use it as part of a campaign to get more private money. But, you know, I fully understand that the requirement is not appropriate in all cases.
Thank you, Madam.
And again, we have to just look at our bottom. To my mind, you make a good case for an increase in that number. We'll just have to look at the bottom line, and then we put everything together. So thank you for coming in, bringing it to our attention. And Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at the appropriations here, and a lot of the appropriations that have come in the past also were by competitive grant. Would you guys be more willing to go into a competitive grant style appropriation?
Madam Chair.
Mr.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, we were, as you know, in a competitive grant last biennium. Unfortunately, with 14 stations ranging in size, I represent the membership, and it became incredibly difficult for, it is our goal to treat all of the same, all the stations equally, regardless of their size, because they all still have to bill 24/7, 365. But the stations with, we saw a disparity of 85,000 in a year to 155,000, in large part because of the staff size, not necessarily the ability to carry it out, because as I said, they have the ability when we get the funding to hire contractors to do the production. However, we would prefer that it not go back to a competitive grant.
Representative Erdahl. You keep moving. Representative Erdahl.
My wife has wondered about that for years. I'd just like to comment on the competitive grants and to your question, Representative Green, that the fact is that if there were competitive grants this year, and it's hard to speak for who's giving the grants, but I'm guessing they would get more money than they have right now. I mean, that's what happened before. They actually did better under the competitive grants. I'll give you the reasons for this some other time, Representative Green, but the interesting thing is what is being explained to you is that it's difficult for AMPRs. When they get the money, then they have a competitive grant system essentially within their own organization, and it's difficult to give some stations more than others. But in a general sense, they probably would do better in total funding under the competitive grants.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Glazer.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, one of the challenges that we also faced was the Department of Administration created a lay committee to review it, and that lay committee was applying standards that went beyond the scope of what this committee recommended. We had situations where there was equipment that was granted, but the project was not. So we received the equipment but couldn't do the project because of the way that it was administered. There were projects that were similar from one year to the next, but it was a new committee that determined that the stations didn't have the resources, even though that was not one of the grant criteria, and clearly they had done it already. But they went beyond the scope of the guidelines, which is why we would prefer not to do that, because this lay committee in large part, in our opinion, it was not an issue of the Department of Administration, but the lay committee went beyond the scope of these guidelines.
Okay. I think we need to move on. So unless there are any specific questions, Representative McDonald, do you want?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Just to respond to Mr. Glazer, we met in my office, and you played with me not a cassette tape, I guess that we don't make those anymore, but a CD. And I'm a fan of the program and your stations around Minnesota, and I see the validity and the necessity for those great programs. And let me just state this regarding that 25% grant. I'm not sure how you can audit that or monitor that, but for those programs and companies that simply don't have the capabilities of coming up with a 25% grant, then I think it would be beneficial to have at least the tools necessary for that to be a requirement, I mean a suggestion, not a requirement. But there are certain programs that certainly can afford a 25 or 65% match. Well, for those that cannot, yes, I would be at least one vote to consider to not allowing that and letting them have a suggestion.
Maybe you can help us phrase what language we'll use as we discuss that.
I'd be delighted to.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we don't have anyone specifically next, so we'd have a like to come, and that'd be someone who has some opinion on something that we're doing.
They're all
happy. We would like Representative Green.
As long as there's nobody coming forward, maybe I can entice them down.
Okay. Please do.
There's a lot of issues when we first started meeting in Legacy. The legislative auditor did a lot of testifying, and I actually read his reports. I don't know how many people did, but I did, and I started red tagging all the issues that people who had received Legacy money had not complied with, and I quit red tagging them because the reports ended up all red tags, and so when I see now. I think that there's something in here for the Purpich Center, which also had some red tags in it, and now we're appropriating money for administrative costs. I don't know quite how that fits in there, but also, is there anything in place right now that says to the people who are receiving this money that we have audits out there, and if you're not complying with the audits, if you're not meeting the recommendations, then we need to look into that.
But one of the things, it's actually something, thank you for saying that, because you've called my attention to something. I was anxious, and we have to discuss it with the legislative auditor because they don't like being given money and told to do something. We actually wanted to put some language that would that's within what they think is okay that would extend the legislative auditor's work. Because the legacy is so new, and because it has, I mean, you know, three biennium is still so new, and because it needs to have an acceptance if it's going to go on afterwards. So we want some more involvement with the legislative auditor, and I'd intended to do that, and I'll try to do that. I don't know if there's anyone here for the Purpich Center. Okay, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because I was in another hearing where that issue was raised, they have in fact changed administrative personnel since that particular study was made. So there's been a significant addressing of those issues.
Representative.
Oh, thank you, Representative Hausman. Actually beyond the same thing that I was going to say, that I don't know what the date, Representative Green, on that report was, but last year, or last biennium, at some point we had a report, and the findings of the auditor were given to us, and we tried to address those, and one of them, that some reports were late.
Yeah.
And we did, they do have each of the four dedicated funds are on a rotating basis being audited by the auditor. And as far as I know, we try to institute some things to make sure that these reports are done in a more timely manner, and I'm thinking that when the next reports come out, we will find that they are being done more timely. I mean, one thing is simple. We shouldn't be giving money to anyone who's not doing the reports.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I brought up the Purpich Center because it was in front of me. But the fact is that I didn't read any report that said everything was good. Every single report had issues in it, and it's not just a matter of timing. It was a question of there's money that's been appropriated, and they still don't know where it is because there was no record. And so there's some real issues out there that I think that we need to address.
Again, one of the things we really need to think of is the newness of this program, and we need to, and one of the purposes of the auditor's report is that it causes corrective action, and one would be more concerned if it didn't do that than if there's a need for, than that they point out that there's a need for corrective action. So, you're saying that we need more oversight, which is true, and, you know, the whole system does need some. Anyway, I think we need to go on because I really, Representative McDonald, do you have?
Well, since nobody else came down.
Oh, no, we do have someone.
Oh, well, okay. Regarding Representative Green's statement,
okay.
Regarding the auditor, a question for you, Chairman. Is with your bill, will this committee or yourself as the chairman be able to sit down with Jim Nobles and the auditor and be able to put in place those mechanisms and tools to make sure that the monies are being appropriated and spent? Because this expires, folks, and if it's abused, there'll be a lot of money spent to repeal the law and keep the money back in the taxpayers' pocket.
Remember,
so we have to ensure.
It expires, so we
expires,
don't have to
right.
repeal it.
It's, no, well, it'll expire, but if it's spent wisely, it'll be passed
hopefully.
On again. So,
yeah, hopefully.
So you'll do that.
Okay.
We'll sit down with Jim Nobles and make sure that those things are addressed.
Right. Okay. Yes. See,
do you want to go first?
Yeah. We're trying to, and again, we're asking if people can keep themselves within
Absolutely.
3 minutes unless necessary.
Absolutely.
So.
I'll be very, very brief. I'm Lucinda Winter. I'm Executive Director at Minnesota Film and TV. And number one, I wanted to thank you for the appropriation for our agency for filmmakers, for grants for filmmakers. But I really wanted to speak on behalf of the grants to the small theaters moving to digitization, because we get a lot of calls into our office, and I'm certainly speaking in support. This is something that we hear a lot about, and I really think it speaks directly to the idea of access to the film arts in our smaller communities, and also it's an economic development issue, because when the small theater closes down on Main Street, then people aren't going down to dinner, coming down for dinner and shopping, and it's really a loss to our small towns when they lose their theater. One thing that I could do that would be helpful, perhaps, would be to talk with NATO, the National Association of Theater Owners, and get a handle on the current pricing for digitization to moving to digital projection, so you'd have some idea of what the costs are that they're facing right now, because it does shift. It's actually dropping to move to digital, but it's still quite an expensive proposition. I'd be happy to provide you with that information so you can gauge how many theaters you're able to help with your appropriation.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Hi, very quickly. My name is Mark Hughes, and I happen to have a...
Just a second.
Oops. I had a question.
Yes. Question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Winter, do you have any idea how many movie theaters there are in Minnesota that need to update to digitalization?
I don't have an exact number, but I can tell you just in terms anecdotally of the calls we get into our office in the last year alone, I've received 4 calls from small towns asking for help. And that, those are the ones that found my office, knew enough to call our office and ask for help. So you'd have to guess there'd be more than that. I certainly don't know exactly, but if 4 found our phone number and called us and asked for help, you would think there's a base of these small towns facing this. And frankly, digital, everybody's going digital. The studios are going digital. If you want to show digital, if you want to show studio films, you're going to have to be in a digital format. There's not going to be any other option. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, very quickly. My name is Mark Hughes, and my cable access program is carried on the Minnesota Channel, so thanks for your appropriation to DPT or the Minnesota Channel. But I'm here today to speak on behalf of your Executive Director Barry Glazer and his Amperes program. I've worked with him in the past. I'm sure he'll fill out his reports, and I'd like to see if there's any appropriation as far as funds that could be steered his way and adhered to. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming. Yes. Okay. Anybody else wants to say something? Does that mean we just vote now and pass it out? There's got to be some corrections or what?
There will be some amendments later.
Yeah, so. I know, but we're asking from the public. Amendments don't come from the public.
Expired.
What? Yes. We'll have more testimony on Friday, too, I guess. But, you know, is there anybody, is there any more discussion then from committee members? I'm sorry I cut you off, Representative McDonald. You were absolutely right.
I know.
There was.
I know.
Okay. Is there any?
Okay. Well, Representative Madam Chair, if I may, what's the timetable now going forth with some of the bills and so on and so forth?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tomorrow we'll be having public comment on the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Friday we'll be doing amendments to the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Next Monday we'll be working on the Clean Water Fund portion, and Tuesday we'll be working on the Parks and Trails Fund, and then Wednesday we will be putting everything together in a single delete all or delete everything amendment to 1183, when that'll be a night meeting as well, so of the morning and the evening to go ahead and offer amendments to the final version of the bill.
Do you want that out to you guys all on email?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if that could
It's been emailed, guys.
You could send that out to us?
It's been
And did you say Tuesday night, do we have a night meeting or not? All right, no night meetings Tuesday night.
Okay, what's happening Tuesday night?
I'm busy.
Okay. Representative Ward, what? Excuse me. What do you need? What do we need to say?
Representative McDonald, ideally, we'd like amendments, you know, the day before, so we could have them printed out for duplicating, but, you know, the 215, and so we could get them to research, so they have a chance to look at them, especially if they're more controversial. But, you know, we don't have rules in this committee. It's more a courtesy. But so if you could have them either the morning of when we have an afternoon meeting or the day before, that'd be preferable. And I'll send out a more detailed schedule. So thought it was broken down pretty well, but I'll do that.
Madam Chair. Michael, did you read my mind? I didn't even ask that question.
What?
I was going to ask that question. That was phenomenal.
really. We have everybody.
Did anyone hear me ask the question about amendments? But it was going to be my question. And then I'll finish with, well, how many hours should we allow on Friday? Some of us need to adjust our schedules accordingly.
Until we finish.
Until we finish.
We're thinking maybe 4 hours, 3 hours.
4 hours? And will there be wine in the cafeteria then by the time? He wanted to know, not me.
I'm expecting, my experience with wine actually is that I have kids who work in vineyards in Oregon in the Willamette Valley, and we're expecting a case of really high class wine, but it hasn't come yet. So,
and chair.
Yeah.
So. Just really briefly, Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, imagine that we'll have any of the additional testimony on the Outdoor Heritage Fund and Arts and Culture on Friday, so it would depend on how much time we have, how many amendments we have, which you'd know from your caucus members, and then how much testimony we have. We don't have too many people scheduled as of yet for Friday, so I would hope that it wouldn't be too long. But
and, of course, we're the couple of bills come to us. We've gotten the Lessard bill from the Environment Committee. A couple of bills have to come. First go through the Environment Finance Division and then come here.
Representative Ward.
Madam Chair, I was just going to suggest that we move Friday's meeting to Tuesday night, and the wine would be here besides, I think. But seriously,
we just heard Erdal say he was busy Tuesday.
That's right, exactly. So, anyhow, Madam Chair, speaking of Friday, and I know that somebody asked earlier, I know we have a noon start, supposedly, or proposed or whatever. Is there any possibility for an earlier start on Friday?
We'll check.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Obviously, people starting 10 would be better if we can. Well, was there some? What's the answer that would? Well,
Madam Chair, Ms. Pomeroy was just saying that The staff needs to check to see if they're available as well, earlier in the day as well, I guess, so.
Well, getting missed. Okay. Representative Green.
I know I don't expect you to change your plans for me, but on Friday, I actually have another committee starts at 10. So.
Ditto.
Yeah. Look, we'll leave it at noon unless we're really, we'll look at what the schedule is unless it looks really pretty clear. Can't be as important as this committee, though. So. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Again, any comments from audience members? Okay. Okay. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.